Welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie.
Greetings and welcome to What's Wrong with Wolfie, a retro podcast dedicated to the pop culture of the 80s, 90s and zeros. My name is Jason.
And I'm Rich.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Steve.
It's time to go back to the 80s and discover a John Hughes teen comedy that three quarters of us have never seen. We prize ourselves away from creating our perfect partner to discuss this wacky and sometimes weird film. Anthony Michael Hall, Lan Mitchell Smith, Kelly Lib Brock, Bill Paxton and Robert Downey Jr. star in Weird Science.
You know, it's not a bad idea.
What?
Making a girl. Actually making a girl.
This is Wyatt and Gary.
I'd give her womdigious mammary glands.
Something's about to change their world. Something out of this world.
She's alive!
What would you little maniacs like to do first?
It's all in the name of science. Weird science.
If you want to be a party animal, you have to learn to live in the jungle.
Not us.
Not here.
No way.
She is turning their lives.
Trust me for once, will you?
What is going on?
Gary, I don't know.
I don't know.
Their minds. And their house. Upside down.
It's seriously affecting your sex life.
It's completely unnatural.
Do you realize it's snowing in my room?
Totally unbelievable.
What's going on?
And definitely weird.
Hey, dudes.
They went from zeros to heroes in one fantastic weekend.
That's so good.
Universal Pictures presents a John Hughes film, Weird Science.
It's purely sexual.
Is it purely sexual?
I don't think so.
Not less so than I expected, actually, this film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was expecting like some Revenge of the Nerds stuff, but, you know, wasn't quite that bad.
No. Well, two teenage boys, Gary Wallace and Wyatt Donnelly, are struggling socially. Girls aren't attracted to them and boys bully and embarrass them. Their lack of girlfriends leads them to try to create their own woman, Dr. Frankenstein style, but with a computer instead of body parts. Their experiment proves successful and their perfect woman is created, Lisa. She helps them to gain popularity and confidence, but also gets them into some dangerous situations. Coming up on this episode, we go back to our usual format and give our verdict and score on the film for the board from above. Someone please come up with a better name. We go through our favourite scenes and the cast of the movie. Carl returns to share his thoughts on Weird Science in our listener section. And to start us off, we give our general impressions on the film. And I'm keen to hear what you guys thought as ever, since Rick Henderson said this was one of his favourite films when he came on the podcast. I've been really intrigued to watch and discuss it since then. I mean, like, I think one of the big things I took away from watching this film is that it doesn't really explain the science behind all the weird stuff and how this woman actually came to be in the real world.
That's part of the fun. It's because science.
It's weird, quote unquote, science.
Science at the speed of plot.
Did the 1994 TV series like expound on that? Did it like, you know?
That's where all the lore is. Yeah, that's where it's
explained. I've seen some of the show and the film a fair few times, so I'd be interested to hear the rookies' first views on it, who have only seen it today.
Yeah, go on, Steve. As you're fresh from watching it like half an hour ago.
That's right. I finished watching this about half an hour ago. I had never seen it before. Yet another classic of cinema that this podcast has allowed me to indulge in seeing. It's So, okay, I was ready to fucking hate this film. I was aware of it growing up, and I was ready to come onto this podcast with my righteous millennial snowflake indignation about this disgusting 80s boner comedy objectifying women, etc., etc. I mean, it definitely objectifies women. There's no doubt about that. Literally, as the main characters, you know, create a woman specifically for, you know, let's not mince our words, fucking, but... It's not like that at all. I was kind of surprised. If you can put aside the fact that this woman exists solely because she was created by two teenagers that want to fuck her, she's actually like really sweet and has their best interests in mind, and it doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. And she seems to sincerely care about them and wants what's best for them. And I was surprised by that. And I liked the relationship of the two main characters. I thought their friendship was wholesome and believable. I thought all the performances were good. I enjoyed seeing a very young Robert Downey Jr. Bill Paxton is great in this film. There's a lot of problems with this film. I'm not going to go as far as to say that it was a great film, but I'm surprised at how much I enjoyed it.
Similar kind of assessment to Steve. Again, I'd never watched this before. I went in pretty much expecting it to just kind of piss me off. I thought it was going to be incredibly sexist and problematic and just kind of dated. But I really enjoyed the energy of it. And I feel like even though there were some problems with it, you know, like some of the stuff was a bit, ooh, Christ, in this day and age, you know, some nice F slurs and, you know, general objectifying of women. I thought the film in itself wasn't sexist at heart. I feel like the main leads, they were kind of misguided, but they weren't like problematic characters. They obviously kind of actually learned something along the way. And I thought that the character of Lisa, like played by Kelly LeBrock, absolutely fantastic. Like, she made this whole movie. She easily could have come in, because I mean, I saw the synopsis for this film and it said about like how they create this woman and she kind of turns her world upside down. I thought it was going to be one of those, oh, what, like woman's on the loose. You know, they can't control her. She's embarrassing and cringe, but she's really fucking cool. And she kind of almost made this film in some ways. And I'm not going to say it's a feminist film, but she was a really strong character in that like kind of, you know, cynical, strong female character way. You know, she is like pure confidence throughout the whole film. When she wants to go out, she takes the guys with them. She takes them to a bar full of older people and kind of instills in the boys that not to judge people by their first, you know, by the initial impressions, that all people are people. She takes like Chet, the older brother, to task about how he treats his younger brother. She doesn't take any shit when she invites everyone around to the party. She invites everyone. She treats everyone equal. She socializes with them. And she's just like a really cool person. Everyone likes her and she likes everyone. And I thought she was such a positive force in this movie, a movie that I thought was going to be a bit, I don't know. I just thought I was going to have problems with it, but I thought she really kept the movie moving along. And she made the movie for me enough that I kind of enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to.
But did you think that at the beginning though? Like, I mean, that there was the whole bit where, you know, Lisa's been created, and I think she's down in the garden with Wyatt, and like we all know he's a 15-year-old boy, and she's getting off of him, like,
yeah, grab ass. I was on the train watching this. I was like, that's a nonce. Like,
yeah, I mean, look, it's got problems, this film, yeah, for sure.
I mean, even in the 80s when this came out, surely some people were like raised eyebrows that this grown womb was, you know.
I mean, even if they aged them by 2 years, wouldn't have been a problem. Because, but then you verge on a thing of nearly 20, don't you, at that point?
That's the bit when she says to him, like, oh, are you really only 15? I was like, ooh. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's pretty firmly a product of its time. Like, yeah. Flip the genders on that and, like, whoa. But because it's an older woman and a younger man, I'm not saying it's okay. It is not okay.
No.
But it was 1985. And so that's just not. It's fine in 1985. That's fine.
Yeah. So, like, when then that scene happened, I was like, what am I in for here? I mean, what are we, what are we going to get in this film? Like, where this scene is, seems to be an okay film to put in a major motion picture. But thankfully, the film goes off into, like, a completely different direction to everything that Rich was just saying and Steve. And, like, it ended up just being, a, like, a really fun teen kind of, what's that, coming of age kind of film, isn't it? You know?
Yes, I guess. Do you know, the film doesn't know what it is either, so it's fine for us to not really know what it is.
What I kind of liked about it, like, I found Lisa didn't fit into that kind of two different kind of molds you usually get for a female character in these movies. She wasn't, like, motherly, and she wasn't, like, the manic pixie dream girl that makes them better people and, you know, shows them, you know, how they can, you know, achieve what they want to achieve. And just, you know, like, she never filled those really, like, cliche roles. She had this really cool agency about her. She took charge in every scene, and she was just a really positive presence for the whole film. I mean, there was a bit, like, when she meets the parents, and I'm not gonna lie, I was pissing myself for that, when she's just talking about I forget even what she was saying now to the mum and dad, and, like, the dad pretty much, like, for the rest of the film just had a complete, like, mental break and didn't know who his son was. He just didn't recognize him.
When she says, isn't it sad that your son's only sexual outlet is tossing off over a magazine in the bathroom?
Yeah. Right. And then the gun comes out and you're like, what?
So good. Yeah. So good.
What about yourself, Chris? Come on, man. You're the one who's seen the film.
When we, I think it was just me and you on that interview, weren't we, with, was it Rick Anderson? And I wanted to talk about it some more because, and I'm quite glad that we picked it for a recording, because I hadn't seen it since probably the early mid 2000s. And even then it was on a Channel 4 or something late at night. We had watched it previously. For some reason, we'd rented a video when we were younger, and I don't know why, but I remember seeing it at an age like, it was the 90s. We all saw films when we shouldn't have been seeing films, but it wasn't a gross out comedy like Porky's would be, was, right? Before you had your American Pies and stuff like that. So it was quite a mid-range gross out comedy. But as you get older and you watch it more, like Rich says, you appreciate the earnest performances by Kelly LeBrock and the two leads, because it's not rapey. It's not overbearing. It's quite nice and refreshing to have a film that treats its audience with the respect that the script, well, like Steve said, the film doesn't know what it wants to be. Let's face it. And sometimes it's fourth wall breaking gags that lets the audience know that they're all in on the gag, and we know this is silly. And I like that. As an adult, I the first time I noticed the fourth wall breaking was when I watched it the other day, and I was like, I've never noticed that before.
There's that bit where Bill Paxton says, next thing you know, you'll be wearing a bra on your head, and he straight up just looks into the camera,
And you've got Lisa just looking at the camera twice in the film, and I think Anthony Michael Hall looks at the camera again, so it's that very, like, not sugar-coated, but it's that kind of like, yeah, we know what we're doing. We're just having silly fun and just roll with it. And yes, some messages are mixed, but it's enjoyable and it's mad and it's silly and it's a little bit sexist here and there. But it's difficult to put a finger on what Lisa's character actually symbolizes in this film, because I think everyone who watches it can see different things.
What I really like about Lisa, though, I'm pretty much going to talk about Lisa this whole podcast. I feel like she was the absolute, like, heart and soul of this movie.
It's kind of like friend zone the movie, isn't it, really?
I don't even know that, though, because, like, the two main characters come together at some point we made this woman and we can't do anything with her because we're so fucked up in our own heads. We don't know how to approach her or do anything.
And they gave her so much intelligence and social awareness.
Yeah. She's like, they make them realize themselves that, like, the problem isn't the woman, the problem is us. We're the issue. She's like reality check personified, and she helps them understand that about themselves.
Yeah, she understands that what people want to see is you, not what this idea of what you think people want to see, which is probably kind of something that should be shown to a lot of some young men these days, like the whole, like, fitting into the male hierarchy. I'm going to do a Jordan Peterson impression now, but like the male hierarchy and the sexual marketplace. It's just like, this whole idea of just, I mean, I guess in a way you could say they made her in a computer, but it's almost like you're gamifying the whole idea of like being attractive to women and getting something in return. And there's just this skewed like male perspective on what it takes to be accepted and to be popular, when really it's like, hey, just be yourself. Because like, no spoilers, but the two girls they really want to be with at the end kind of just see them for who they are. They show real courage, and it's enough that the girls, you know.
And the guy, Gary, was his name's Gary, right? He like fesses up and says like, that's not my car, and all of that was fake. And she just says, whatever you are, I like it. It's fine.
That's
fine.
A really good message. Like,
it is.
Like, you see these guys like online nowadays, like these like male pickup artist types, and they're just creating this illusion of like their success, and they just got this like car that they've leased, and like, oh, I'm rich, and I'm an influencer, and it's like, you're just tragic. Be yourself. Be real. Be genuine. And I really appreciate it. This film's like 35 years old, and it's like, oh shit, it's like got something to say to like 2023 men. Like,
there's a moment where they're hiding in a closet and they're told, you know, this is an opportunity for you to demonstrate your bravery and your masculinity. And Gary just says, those are outdated concepts.
Yeah. Well, I was literally, my jaw was on the floor. Like, I was like, oh my God. It was like, that spoke to me, man. I was like, fucking hell, this film gets it from 1985. What the hell?
Another self-aware foreshadow, like, just...
Mm-hmm.
And
insane.
Again, we talked before, like earlier, like how to explain the science. They don't. They just expect the audience to just understand this silly concept that they hack into this major computer database somewhere and it does all the programming and rendering and stuff.
You need to fill it with data. That's what you need to do. You need to fill it with data and then complexity. That's how that works.
And scanning pictures of Albert Einstein for intelligence.
It's like very throwaway. Like, this will do. You know, that's a tech.
I mean, let's get into it. Like, is she the doll? Like, did the doll get turn human? Also, they do the hacking thing twice in this film. Is it a does the hacking cause the rainstorm, or is it a coincidence that there was a rainstorm both times they did the hacking? Like, I'm unclear on that.
It's like some weird like Master of the Universe Highlander weather system going on this small American town. It's like red clouds. Okay, was that just freak weather? Or,
and also, you can get past a firewall by just tapping the keyboard, and then the firewall will disintegrate with a bowling sound effect.
Yeah.
Ding.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I took it as as she was the doll, because the doll disappeared. They couldn't find it, and then you know, she came out of the door, blew up, and then she came out. You know.
But then why didn't the house get a giant magazine going through it? It got a missile going through it.
Because that second time, they forgot the doll, didn't they?
Yeah. And it was on a magazine with a missile on the front cover, which created a giant missile. But it should have created a giant magazine, surely.
But the way... when I originally watched this, when I was, 10, maybe 12... I took that as whatever complex stuff they're screwing around with on the computer system, it takes the image of that, but like basically incinerates so it manifests this, like, I don't know, some hologram shit. I don't know. She's been manifest stuff from nowhere.
That's the other thing. Is she a genie?
She can form solid objects. So as a kid who was into weird sci-fi stuff as a kid, I was like, oh, she's just manifesting solid state holograms, cars, clothes, random events. And
because the cars do disappear at the end, right? So, yeah.
And I just took it as, but like you said, Steve, I've never even thought about it. Why was it a rocket and not a huge magazine?
It kind of like stopped making sense at a certain point for me. Like, it was really weird when it went off like the chain, and like there's the one, like the couple in the picture frame were dancing, and then there was like, and then Bennett showed up, and
that was a mirror, wasn't it?
Was it? I don't remember.
No, it was a picture frame of his parents. Yeah, and when they started hacking, weird shit started to go on, and like, one of them was they were dancing in the frame,
and like weird gravity things where, like, you know, rooms would just turn around, and
yeah,
things would just fly out of the chimney, and it's
there was that moment where there's that woman playing the piano and then she's getting sucked up the chimney, and of course her clothes had been sucked off first.
Funny.
Not a perfect film. It has issues for sure.
It's the 80s. People go and see a movie just for one tit shot for 2 seconds.
I'd be in a PG as well.
Right? So, and then teenagers would rent it to pause it at that moment. So. Yeah.
But I feel like the way this film was marketed, if I went to the cinema to this film to see tits, I'd have been very disappointed. Yeah. I'd have left this film like, what the fuck was that? Where was all the sex and stuff? Because it's just not that film at all.
No, at all. It wasn't Revenge of the Nerds, which is a blessing. So
you get that kind of weird, lovely moment where the bullies kind of respect the kids because of their association with Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting on the bed, weirdly, all with his parents' bras on their heads, which is the only way I can describe it.
Ceremonial, Chris.
Huh?
It's ceremonial.
But it just does it weird. As I watched it the other day, I was just like, where did they get the bras from? Because they're not womanizers. They've probably still got their V-plates. So are these their parents' bras that they were wearing, and no one bats an eyelid, and they're all sat there and they all have this like heart to heart, like respectful thing, and it's like, yeah, we can create something for you.
I'm not being funny, Chris, but like I was still trying to wrap my head around how, you know, a woman had come alive, not to worry too much about where they've got their bra hats from.
You know? There's lots of things in this film that makes you wonder about why.
Well,
it was fun. But it's those silly things that pop into my head as a grown-ass man. I'm like, hang on a minute.
Dear Mr. Downey Jr., in the 1985 film Weird Science, there is no explanation for where those bras came from. Could you please explain?
Yeah.
But I think it speaks volumes for an 80s film. I think like we get spoiled now in films where we stroll in and we expect to have a plot described to us or to make sense or for us to know exactly why this is happening for the most part. I mean, I know not every film still has plot holes in it, but like, I don't know. Like, I think if we put ourselves our 80s head on. Yeah. Like,
I think you're right.
This is just part of the norm for the time it came out, I guess. Yep. And
we didn't,
you go in there just for a great time. You're not there to like worry about the actual plot. They've just come up with a great zany idea of a story they really want to tell. They don't care about the how or why or
no, it just happened. You know.
We didn't get a prequel movie where like you see the mum buy the bras, like, and at the end of it, like she puts them in the drawer, like mid credit sequence. You know, it's like
pulling a hair out of the bra, or you know.
That's the other thing that cracked me up. All of their parents and grandparents were boring as fuck. Like,
yeah,
stuck up their own ass. Like,
very British as well, which is a turn off.
Oh, yeah, the grandparents.
What's going on in there? And I have a feeling that we're not going to approve.
Yeah. The happy grandparents in the cupboard.
That was good. I like that.
Which they were still there at the end of the film. No one told us what happened to them.
You're right.
And Anthony Michael Hall's parents didn't know who he was. Because she wiped their memory.
But the grandparents still in the cupboard now. Yeah. You know, that I need to know the answers.
Chet got turned back low, so that's something. But
he did, yeah.
I really liked that Chet, like the thing they did. I can't really call it an animatronic. It was too crude for that. But
the toad, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like a gross puppet, wouldn't it? With a flat
constant
top.
a
Bill Paxton flat top.
It had constant fart sounds. It was fucking brilliant. I loved it.
It was Bill Paxton's voice acting was when it ate the fly and he was disgusted at himself because his instinct was to eat the fly and he's just like, what the hell?
That was really cool.
Another very self-aware moment in the film.
But like, how did she do, wait, who is she? Like, what the fuck? Is she a robot? I thought she was a robot before I watched the film. The film's called Weird Science. Like, I assumed that she was a robot. Yeah. It's almost like they accidentally conjured a genie or something, right? Mm. She's pre-existing. She was a genie and they accidentally conjured her with their weird hacking, right? Because turning somebody into a toad, it's like, what's that got to do with anything? Why can she do that? This film is bananas, man.
Yep.
Where's our origin story? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like,
but that's what, when I was a kid and saw it, I just assumed she was a magical hologram type thing. Because at the end, She's at another school as their gym teacher.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
She doesn't actually cease to exist. She just moves on.
Yeah. So, but she told the boys that they created her. So is she lying? Was she like, I'm going to help these guys by letting them think that they made me, but actually I'm a wizard genie lady.
I like this, Steve. I like you. Yeah. She kind of like put the idea into their head and then kind of made it look like they created her when she was actually already created. Yeah. I like it.
So she could say the confidence was within you all along.
Yeah. Yes. Are we saying that John Hughes accidentally made a version of the Littlest Hobo with Kelly LeBrock?
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. That's what we're saying.
What was that show that my mum used to watch with What's His Face from Little House on the Prairie? Is it
Angel? Yeah, why did Angel catch you?
Michael Landon, yeah.
I like this. You've made it even better.
We're spitballing sequels and extended universes here. So
I want the Weird Science extended universe. Disney need to get on that shit. Seriously, I don't know who owns the rights these days.
They based a TV show on it, but it wasn't a sequel. It was just based on the show and then elongated shenanigans, I believe.
Was she like British in it? Show? That's rude.
No. Nah.
I was really, when I went into this film, also, I had no idea who she was. I'd never heard of her. And I just figured it's going to be some really underwhelming, like Nancy Travis type, like from Three Men and a Little Lady or Three Men and a Baby. Like, oh, she's this random British woman who's going to be this like somewhat kind of love interest in this American movie. And I'd never heard of her before this. And I haven't even looked to see what she did afterwards. Like, I've not looked at her IMDb. She's
not
really, really cool. And I'm like,
she was really good in this. Yeah. I just want to rich up on that. Like, she's great. Her performance is genuinely really good. Yeah. I mean, the script is dog shit, but she spins gold with it, and she's very, very good.
But when I looked her up earlier, and she's not done much before. So she's essentially appeared in two or three things before Weird Science.
Really?
Her acting is better than some actors that you see in multi-million dollar movies today, looking at you, Marvel. And yeah, for someone with no experience other than modeling, and she was great all through the film.
She was in Hard to Kill with Steven Seagal.
She was. And she was in Wrongfully Accused.
I have not seen Hard to Kill since probably the early 90s. When was Hard to Kill actually out? What, early, mid-80s?
1990
it came out. 1990. Now, my mum, unfortunately, was a Steven Seagal fan. Probably not now.
I'm so sorry.
So, yeah, I have not seen Hard to Kill in, God, years.
But there was one thing as well I really appreciated about Weird Science, and I just love it every time it comes up in these 80s films, and that is the whole like computer graphics that we saw at the beginning. Like, all the whole kind of Tron grid things and zooming in and all the cool graphics. I just really always appreciate them. They're just really fun.
The more wireframes and,
and the old Dead or Alive boob physics, you know.
Yeah.
It was difficult in the mid-80s to, like, hacking was a very abstract concept to people, so you had to demonstrate it visually. We were still doing that in 1993 with Jurassic Park, right? But this is a particularly egregious example of hacking turning into an incredibly basic, like, descent game. weird, but very cool. And with the music and everything, this film is also like 80s as fuck. And that gave me the warm nostalgia feels because it's an American 80s film, which means the protagonists are rich as fuck. They live in a huge house.
Yep, the old McAllister house. I love it.
And everything is, you know, state of the art for the 80s.
It's the shorter friend, isn't it? Who's the rich one with all the computers and mansion. Yes. And that's what struck me. Like, you just reminded me how this massive house and he's got everything in his room. We've all had that friend who had everything. What made me smile was when they're panicking and he says, disconnect the phone, disconnect the phone. And I'm like, that's not been a thing for at least 24 years.
Well, when they start hacking, they've got that modem where you actually physically put the phone handset onto the modem, which is crazy.
And it's just like we've all watched films like that and War Games that were using this thing called the internet, and I don't think us in the UK knew what that was in the 80s, did we? We're still using paper cups.
I don't think we do now, to be fair.
No. And it struck me as like really odd, because we wouldn't have for a decade after this film routine internet connections in the mid 90s.
Yeah, true.
Late 90s, and they were doing that shit 10 years before. And they were using things like scanners and stuff, and feeding stuff into fax machines to get the images into the system. I'm like,
well, how else are you going to build a lady if not feeding cutouts from magazines into a fax machine?
It was either some fax machine or early 80s scanner or something, but it just because science.
I'd be curious to see how they'd probably do it these days if they made a new movie, like what AI. The process would be.
AI.
I'd mint her as an NFT as well, probably.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she would just
do the moon.
lose value completely. And yeah, so incredibly sad ending.
Yeah.
So let's hear Carl's thoughts on
come on,
weird
Carl.
Science.
Is it going to be as shit as Jurassic Park? Let's find out.
Or would he be rather watching The Fly? And Weird Science. Let's find out, shall we?
Hello again, Wolfie Pod. It's me, Carl. I've got some thoughts about Weird Science. Funnily enough, it was a film that was always advertised on some videos that I used to watch back in the day, but it was never in the back of the Volvo with the video rental man, so I was never able to watch it. So it was good when it actually came up on BBC iPlayer about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I watched it then. So it's quite fresh in the mind. Yeah, I enjoyed the film. It's got a lot of computer action in it, which John Hughes borrows from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's got the dickhead sibling in it, which is another feature of a lot of his films, and the absent parents as well, which is another trope as well. But it's a winning formula. I very much enjoyed Vernon Wells's performance at the end there, where he came in as Johnny Matrix's nemesis, Wes Bennett. Was really exactly the same character as well. But take nothing away from it. I think it was a really good film, nicely enjoyable. Perhaps a little bit too long, because there wasn't the character exploration as there was in Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But there, you know, we are preaching a tough gospel. He's a really good director. On the whole, I'd say if Home Alone was Bubble Bobble, I'd say that this film was Chuck and Pop, i.e. it had to be made for the evolution of the genre to continue, but it wasn't quite the finished article. Enjoying the show. Cheerio.
Wow. Okay.
Joe, how could he have topped his hilarious take about Jurassic Park last time? The answer is a deeply sincere and informed and intelligent take on Weird Science.
There you go. And perfect. The Volvo. Oh man. Wow, that made me happy. That made me smile.
That's the funny thing. That's probably where me and my mum and brother rented it from back in the 90s, was the guy who comes around the estate once a week to rent a few videos.
Back of his car.
God.
Oh, we live in such good times.
I used to have a video man come round. He had two crates filled with VHS on his little trolley or whatever. Yeah. I used to come and knock on the door. Used to get a couple of videos.
This is foreign to me. I was an RAF child, so I was living on some RAF camp in a foreign land somewhere. So this did not happen for me as a kid.
So you were passed from pillar to post all your life.
Yes. So clearly, this is a British thing that I missed out on in that time.
It is, because we used to about once a week. That was how we saw some of the films, and we didn't have Sky TV at that point either. So my first introduction to The Simpsons was from the weird, creepy video man that came around twice, once a week, and parked up outside with a torch in the middle of winter.
Where's he getting these VHS tapes from? Like, I'm assuming this is not a legit business, and he's not purchased these from the distributor, I assume.
Probably not, no. I don't know, but they were legit copies. They weren't like early 90s printed. They were like proper glossy video cases. So
I always remember one used to come down my road, like, obviously way, way back, and he'd always have, like, those Vipco ones, like Driller Killer and Cannibal Holocaust and that stuff.
I was, wow. Like,
covers, and I was like, I always remember those in, like, Blockbuster.
Contraband.
Always. Yeah, proper, the good shit.
My mum rented us The Simpsons because we didn't have Sky TV. All of our friends were talking about it. We didn't really know what it was. Mm. So we rented the videos. So the first two or three seasons of The Simpsons, I know verbatim because we watched them over and over and over.
Nice.
Wow. Happy memories of the creepy video man. Thanks. Thanks for the memories, Carl.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thanks for sending in your thoughts again. Yeah. Really, really, really appreciate it. And we love to hear it. And yeah, like I said in our last episode, please go and check out his podcast. Yeah, Bite High, No Limit. And yeah, please continue sending in your thoughts, Carl. We love them.
We do. Love them, mate. Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, Carl. Looking in the mirror, I'm such an awful shame, but no matter what I do, I always look the same. I've got to make the best of it. I'm not a pretty sight. I didn't pull on Monday, but I might pull tonight. Could be so wonderful if she answered yes. I haven't really got a chance, I really do. I try my best, but all my mates do better. They tell me later on just how and when they did it. I can't stand it. Why not pretty girls look at me? Why not?
Let's dive into the cast of the film, and I know that we've already talked quite a lot about Kelly LeBrock and her performance. We could talk a little bit about the other guys, Anthony. Is it Anthony Mitchell Hall or Michael Hall?
Michael.
Is it Michael? There you go. Me and my name, say. But Anthony, who played Gary, and out of the two, like, main characters, I quite liked Gary a little bit more than Wyatt.
Mm.
And the way that Gary kind of portrayed him.
Anthony Michael Hall was the golden child of teen comedies and nerd characters, wasn't he, in the 80s? Like Matthew Broderick was. He was acting mm-hmm. from a young age. And I just think he's more natural than the other actor because he's got more experience doing said performances. Have any of you guys seen The Breakfast Club, out of interest?
No.
No.
The next I got to The Breakfast Club was like the new Power Rangers movie, which kind of felt like The Breakfast Club at times, but that was literally the nearest I've got to that movie.
I hadn't watched it in my entire life until COVID. So when my kitchen was shut down, not my kitchen, but I had The Breakfast Club. It came up on Netflix, I believe, and I was like, oh, I'll give that a go. And it's a lovely character study of various kids and teachers who are completely different, but learn to respect each other within 2 hours. It's a great film, a great character study.
Okay.
And this film kind of has echoes of that. It's more about characters than it is gross out, and I think it's very well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's similar time, exactly the same time there's some Breakfast Club?
I think they're separated by like a year.
Okay.
Or 6 months. Yeah, roughly around the same time. But yeah, I was quite surprised how good Weird Science landed with me as a grown-ass adult now.
Mm. Yeah.
I was very prepared to go in and go have, you know, those childhood memories, like go, oh, well, how did I think that was a good film? And I've had that numerous times.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anthony Michael Hall. Did any of you guys watch The Dead Zone in the early 2000s?
Mm-hmm. No.
No, just
not very cultured, seriously. There's so much stuff I've not watched.
Anthony Michael Hall was in the TV adaptation of the Stephen King book, The Dead Zone.
Never saw that one, but he's really good at it. Like, he's got some real chops in this, like real comedy acting mm-hmm. chops. He's very talented. I don't know what's going on in the jazz bar scene.
Oh yeah, the jive.
That's a problem, yeah. Right? I was uncomfortable that whole scene.
Michael Hall, his due, he did it extremely bloody well.
It was authentic, but that was
extremely
the problem.
Authentic. Yeah, yeah.
It's like
the way he,
a little too authentic.
The way he woke up made me think that Lisa had manifested that ability in his head.
I hope so.
He wouldn't be able to just muster that and smoke a cigar and drink whiskey and rum talking like that on a whim. It has to be Lisa doing something to make him easier to get on with.
Like that, it's weird. I can't I come away from that scene unsure of how is it okay? I don't know. I genuinely don't know if that scene is okay or not.
But it's never elaborated on. I just assumed that she made him talk that way so he wouldn't feel awkward. I don't know.
I mean, the comedy of the scene is he sounds like a black man, isn't that funny, right? And that's the part of it.
Yeah.
It's not okay. But then the black characters in it, they're not made fun of. So I don't know. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
And they're talking to him and they're not offended. They're not offended. Yeah. They're talking to him like a human being.
Laughing about titties. So
yeah. And it just reminded me straight up of that scene in Airplane. When the woman gets up. Excuse me, miss, I can speak jive.
Yes.
And it's subtitled.
It was so good. Yeah, that was so good. Yeah, I did think about that scene when I saw this. But
yeah,
I'm not the only one then.
Oh, no, yeah. It's like the only exposure to jive I've had is Airplane. So jive again. I remember that from Airplane.
In the odd Eddie Murphy movie.
Oh, yeah, well.
I kind of knew I was going to like Gary from the off, like when he's in Wyatt's bathroom and like he's pretending to shave.
Yes.
I still do that now, Jason.
He's got like the shaving foam like just all hanging off his face, and like there's the cut of the bathroom when he leaves it, and like Wyatt's going, I hope you've left it all clean and tidy, and it's just like absolutely destroyed.
My favourite Gary line in this film is when they're putting more data in to the woman that they're creating, just more data, and he says, "I want her to leave. I want her to breathe. I want her to live. I want her to aerobicize."
Oh dear.
I'm assuming I pronounced this guy's name properly as well in the intro, but like the spelling of his name is a bit weird. I mean, it's like, is it Lan Mitchell Smith or?
I don't remember.
This is the second main character. Elan? Is that I-L-A-N? I don't know.
No.
Is that uppercase I, lowercase N, A? No, is uppercase it? I, lowercase L, and then A-N, Elan.
Possible.
Ilan.
I'll go with that, Steve, just because I have no idea. I looked it on IMDb and I was like, oh no, I picked another film that's got dodgy names in it.
Yeah, that's a weird name. He's also great in this, though. He's far more, he's got much more of a stick up his ass, but that's also the character, and it totally works for me. He's got a great voice as well. I really enjoyed his voice in this film. That guy has not done very much else, and I did quickly look, and he's a university lecturer now, yeah.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Well, imagine saying that to his students, you know.
Well, the piece of trivia that I read, which obviously could be apocryphal, but he refuses to get his photograph taken so that his students won't draw the comparison and so that he can keep it a secret.
Right.
Fair enough.
Wow.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, no, he was like the more, he played like the more straight kind of faced person of the two. And I think that having that yin and yang really helped the film go along really well. And it kind of, I don't know, did he kind of ground it a little bit, I suppose, maybe, in this kind of weird film?
So I feel like in a weird way, like he obviously was like, I found out of the two boys, like he's the one that Lisa connected with a bit more on a deeper level. So I almost feel like that scene when they're like, she's basically getting off with him, was almost like her basically teaching him to kiss. And it was like quite, it wasn't, I'm not going to say it was sweet, but it wasn't massively nancy, but yeah, on reflection, I'm like, okay, you know what? Because she does call, I always forget the other kid's name now, but she does call him out on his bullshit. Whereas I think with her, like, there was more, I think they had more sweet moments.
Yeah. Gary tries too hard, whereas Wyatt is incredibly anxious and doesn't pretend as much as Gary does that he's something he's not. Yeah. Which is part of why their friendship is so nice, because they don't seem like they would be friends.
Mm.
They seem quite different, but they are really good friends. Like, they seem to really care about each other, which is nice.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's much more else we can say about those. And we've said quite a lot about Kelly and her portrayal of Lisa. But and although we've said a little bit about Bill Paxton as well, I mean, I think there's more to dive into with Bill and how he portrayed Chet.
The militant brother.
Yeah.
Like, the way that they shot him in some scenes just made him come across, I don't know, just really weird, didn't it?
A weird bit, like in his first like scene, where he kind of does that weird like kind of belched thing, and it just doesn't make much sense.
Yeah,
just kind of happens, and I was like, I don't know what to think. I guess it's kind of John Hughes's humor, but I was a bit like, what?
He does that a couple of times in the film as well, just belching as yeah. part of his dialogue. There's a scene quite near the end of the film where he belches and the actors laugh at his belch, and they just kept that in. They just kept it in the film.
Yeah, why not?
Because why not? But I thought Bill Paxton, I mean, that character is an archetype, right? And Bill Paxton did it pitch perfect. He's an absolute fucking bellend, and it's great.
I miss that guy so much. And he just, every role he has, no matter how subdued the character, it's unique. And he plays that militant, obnoxious twat, which I think is obnoxious twat role number four at this point for Bill Paxton, isn't it, in film? And then...
He's shining like his shining moment for me is still True Lies. Like, I got a small dick. It's pathetic.
And he's just beautifully obnoxious, but it's not overdone. You kind of see why he's so highly tightly wound and highly strung, because he's at military school and just like...
And also you meet his dad later, and it's like, oh, of course, of course, his dad also a prick.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, I haven't seen Bill, maybe I just haven't seen a lot of his films, maybe, I don't know, but I've never really seen Bill play this kind of character before, or that I could remember anyway.
He was an obnoxious character in The Terminator.
Oh, of course.
He's the punk with a mohawk. And then you've got...
Even Aliens, he's a bit obnoxious.
That's exactly, that was my next thing. In Aliens, he's deliberately this obnoxious guy who's just, the world's against him, and he's just like shouting, and it's just like, shut the fuck up and get
over. Get over, man! Yeah. Get over. Yeah, so good. So good. Oh, man. I'm going to watch Aliens tonight.
And then we hit the 90s and Bill Paxton starts playing nice people.
Yeah, Twister, man. That's probably the most like honest role I think he ever did. Like,
I still kind of can't believe that's Bill Paxton in that film.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really need to watch that film again.
I can't believe that's Philip Seymour Hoffman in that movie. It's like, the fuck?
It's crazy. Some,
like, slob, guys. Yeah. Like, it's, anyway, that's a tangent.
But yeah, no, I really appreciate the way they filmed this character, like, with these, like, weird kind of angle, right, the real face-up shots. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it just made him look weird.
Yeah, like whenever he's smiling, it feels like the screen is one third his teeth. Like, yeah, they really get up in there. Yeah.
It's just sweaty. Sweaty, gritty, militant, upper class prick of a person. Yeah.
And that flat top is fucking awful. Like, he does not have enough hair for that flat top.
Brilliant.
Not at all. I guess, I don't know if there's anyone else. Robert Downey Jr.?
Robert Downey, that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Robert Downey.
This is part of his career, I think, where he distanced himself from his family name, but still kept his name, Robert Downey.
Yeah.
it's a weird thing, isn't it? A weird box of hogs. 80s and 90s Robert Downey Jr. is just a bit... that happened.
Yeah, it's weird seeing him in this film. He seems like Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah.
He is a master of his craft, but he just looked fucking baked to shit through the entire film.
Yeah.
Also, weirdly effeminate. Is that just me? Like,
just his demeanor, isn't he? He's got like his very delicate kind of.
Yeah, but also the way he's dressed and the way his hair, like, he's just came across as, which is, you know, fine. But I thought, like, it's an 80s like comedy about sex, and apparently this is a desirable man, even though he's like strangely effeminate. I don't know. It was surprising, is all.
Well, maybe they were going for that unambiguous thing. I don't know. Mm. But as for Robert Downey Jr., now it's not a tangent, but my first experience with Robert Downey Jr. was a film called Lost Souls. Has anyone ever seen that?
Don't think so.
No.
It is one of my mum's favourite films, where it's really schmaltzy. Basically, he's born on a bus or in a car that's hit by a bus during a pileup, and the people who die on the bus become his guardian angels. So he goes through therapy his entire life to not see these angels that are following him. And it is a masterclass of performance. If you want to see Robert Downey Jr. use his training in mime and clown, the guy's phenomenal. The guy is a phenomenal mime and clown performer. And you see that in this. You see that kind of like accentuated movements and like swooping runs and stuff. It's just...
Yeah, like when they're apologize, when they're tricking their girlfriends into thinking that they feel bad. So they're going, we're really sorry. And then when they look away, they do these weird, like sinister poses. And then when they look back, they go back to normal. Like, yeah, you can really see it there as well.
If you watch him when they run up the escalator, Robert runs up the middle. Mm-hmm. And it is the most graceful run. And then he just pops off the end as if it's like nothing. Yeah, the guy's just fantastic at physicality, and you see some of it in this film. It was quite nice to see someone have that physical discipline.
Yeah, weird character.
Yeah,
good. I enjoyed his performance. It was good. Yeah, but yeah, strange.
I don't remember anything about his mate. I just like. No. I think I was quite amused by the novelty of Robert Downey Jr. because I feel like this is probably the only film I've watched of his. In his early career, like anything pre Iron Man, I probably watched a few minutes of Chaplin. That's what I know.
Mate, he is phenomenal in Chaplin.
Yeah.
Again, he was dragged over the coals for his casting. So, like, you're casting him, you're casting that womanizing drug addict's son of a famous actor. Watch Chaplin, and just watch his physicality. That is beautiful and on point every single time.
Well, people don't know that about him, I think, was probably the issue, because he doesn't seem to get cast that often with that in mind. No. Right? So,
But yeah, Chaplin is very good, if not very inaccurate, portrayal of Charlie Chaplin. Much like most biopics, they completely missed the point. But we're not talking about Robert Downey Jr., so...
But I just kind of taken aback as well by how quickly like his character and his mate just binned his girlfriends. Just so they... And like, dude,
there's that scene where they're trading them. It's like, our girlfriends are fine with it, so we're going to trade them for your girlfriend.
Yeah,
I'm like, really? Come on.
Yeah,
maybe it's just my mid-40s. Outlook on life, maybe.
Well, I think like, yeah, no, they're scumbags. That's right. But I think the film is supposed to, like, the film agrees with us, I think. They are scumbags and they're treating women badly and that's bad. Like, I think the film knows that. So it's fine.
It's fine.
I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like as well, because obviously there's a few scenes in it where, like, Lisa kind of gives them the eye a little bit, but you know she's got like motives for that. I guess ultimately they're left kind of humbled, and I assume that's her like MO. But she gives those little glances at the party, like she's giving them the common eyes, and it's like, I know what you're doing. This is pretty cool. So
yeah, she's teaching everyone a lesson.
Yeah, she's fucking great. Everyone,
including the parents and the grandparents.
Yeah, she's like a really, really attractive Nanny McPhee, you know, she just comes in and...
I didn't even do that connection, Rich. That is... That's blown me away, actually. That has...
Hot Nanny Hashtag Hot Nanny McPhee. Oh, shit.
Fair enough. Okay. Are we all speaked out on the cast? Anybody else that I missed?
Oh, shit. There's Vernon Wells, obviously. We need to point out that.
Yeah.
Bennett, hell yeah. Wasn't really much to go on that. It was just kind of grunted. Gave like glares and left. So yeah,
there was a point when the Mad Max bikers drive into the house and Wyatt's like, what is going on? And I was like, yeah man, what is going on? What the fuck is this film? Like, it's falling apart.
Did like the one guy who's like the Hills Have Eyes guy, he was a teacher and he was like, oh, I don't
worry. Oh, yeah, can we keep about this between us? I'd hate to lose my teaching job.
That got a genuine lull for me. I was like, that's fucking great. That's the only time I've heard that guy talk as well. I've seen him in like certain things. And
That's another thing that didn't make any sense. Like, she's manifesting all these people and you think that these are just manifested from wherever she's manifesting these things from. And one turns around and says, a teacher, well, what about the other guy with the metal grafted to his face and the mesh eye? What does he do? Where's he from?
He works in finance.
Yeah. the teacher joke lands until you think about, well, what about the other guy?
Yeah.
The film does not give a fuck. It doesn't care. It doesn't know what it is. It's fine. Everything's fine. Listen to the theme song. Everything's good. It's all good.
We're in science. We'll be right back.
Okay, let's dive into our favourite scene of the film then. And Steve, why don't we start with you, mate?
Okay, so I'm going to be... I wish... I only watched the film today, so I can't be super specific. There's a scene where they decide that they want to get with those two other women instead of Lisa, and they're discussing it really close to each other, and then for some reason the camera focuses on their mouths.
Yeah.
They're delivering their lines in a really like flat, clinical way to each other, which was really funny. And it never happens again. It's weird. It doesn't fit with the rest of the film, but I liked that. Like, this film has good moments in it, and that was a good, random, strange moment.
It's not something you see very often either. It's kind of,
I don't know,
quite
if
unique.
Maybe it was maybe it's a reference, like a contemporary to the time reference to something that now makes no sense. I don't know. It reminded me of the HAL 9000 reading the lips of the crew members. That's what it reminded me of.
And what were they talking about again? I can't remember now.
They decided that they were going to try and get with the two girlfriends of Robert Downey Jr. and his friend. And they decided that, and they were discussing it with each other in sort of like a hushed tone.
But this was at the party, wasn't it?
It was at the party, yes.
Because they come into the toilet, hadn't they?
For some reason, yes. They're in the toilet
bathroom. Yeah.
After he'd done a shit in there. Or laid wolf bait, apparently.
Air biscuits as well. I remember that one. That one's going in my journal. I was like, oh yeah, I'm using that. That's great.
And then after they're done discussing it, they leave the shower expecting the two women to still be in there.
Oh no.
The comedy moment is that they've swapped with much uglier women.
Attractive.
I hate when that happens.
And weirdly, again, like triple the age of the guilds as well, weren't they? They're like, really old women.
Most high school students in America, Steve, Jason, they all look in their mid-20s. Some of them pushing 40. That was a scene that I wanted to bring up. That scene in the bathroom, like, never once do they judge any of them for being two guys in a bathroom at a house party.
Yeah, true. You saw some lame joke about it.
They're never judged. There's no slander. There's no nothing. Yep. They're just quite happily just like, oh, why are you in there? We're just chatting.
Yeah, for a film that has two other F-bombs, which I didn't like, there's very little actual like homophobia outside of that. I was expecting them to go, why are there two men in there together? But no, they all
point a laugh, but it's kind of like, it's no different to two girls going to a bathroom and chatting about their lives.
Yep.
That's what these guys are doing. They're hiding in a bathroom, talking things through. No one's judging them.
Yep.
And that's, I quite like that.
Yeah.
It was nice and refreshing, especially for a mid-80s movie.
Okay, Chris, what was your favourite scene, mate?
Probably the bathroom scene alone. Like, I know me and Steve have technically chosen the same scene, but just the way it's treated with respect, and Lisa gives them that space, and she's not hounding them. Where are you? What are you doing? Why am I hosting this party? Why are you hiding in here? She respects that their space, and they need to have that few moments of solitude from that busy, busy party to discuss things on what's actually happening. So she, in a way, gives them that space. She knows they're up there. She knows the two girls are in there with them. But she just lets them discuss things and lets them come to conclusions, and they start to work some stuff out as to what the fuck is going on, because most of the audience don't know what the fuck's going on. And it was just a nice scene that it wasn't judgmental. It was nice. It was like just two boys in a bathroom talking about what's going on.
One shitting.
And one having a shit. That was the comedy moment. But again, it wasn't a comedy moment because they're so comfortable with each other. It's just like, whatever, man. You do what you need to do.
Yeah, let me know if you're going to squeeze cheese, and I can turn the fan on.
They've
clearly done this before, is what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
And it's just lovely that two guys can be that comfortable with each other to sit in a bathroom while one curls one out, and and then you get that comedy gold when they're just like, oh yeah, you want to speak alone? Okay, we'll step into the glass shower door. it's an invisible wall. We can't hear anything.
So weird. I did love that. I didn't expect it. I was like, okay, fair enough.
Don't want to go out to their own party that Lisa's thrown for them to become popular, and they don't want anything to do with it, which is we've all been in that situation where you just don't want to be somewhere.
Yeah.
It's because going to parties is what they think they should want to do. And what they're working out is like, wait, I don't give a shit about parties. Why is this happening? Why are we doing this?
They just want to sit and fire up the Nintendo and just eat crap and
jerk off.
That's what they want, and jerk off in a bathroom, to a magazine. Yeah, it was just a lovely little scene with just two friends being two friends that are so comfortable that they don't give a shit about each other. Literally don't give a shit. It was just that throwaway blink and you miss it when he's just fucking got a piece of paper on fire.
Yeah.
Just behind his shoulder, just waving his fire around. Okay.
Rich?
I touched upon it earlier, but for me, it's definitely where Lisa goes to meet Gary's parents. I just adore that scene because I think that's when you really kind of start to understand who Lisa kind of is. Because she first appears, okay, she's going to kind of just be this nice, like, little sweet character that shows them, you know, how to be better people. But then it's like, oh shit, she's pulled a gun out on Gary's dad. And the payoff to me as well, it's almost like kind of a two-part scene. There's the whole payoff for the gun when they're driving away from the parents and she says about, oh, don't worry, it's just like a water pistol.
Oh, yeah.
And then when he fires the gun off at the end, when he gets rid of the mutants from the party, it's just a water pistol and he just fires. And
it's
just
a real gun.
Fucking hole in the wall.
It's so good. When he pulls that gun on the bikers as well, I was like, oh, wow, look at this. Film structure. Like, they paid off the squirt gun for some reason. But even that they throw it away because somehow now it's a real gun.
Yeah. I just love the fact Lisa just bullshitted him in that moment. Like, I assume obviously that's what it was. She kind of like, she's calm, but she almost seems kind of a bit unstable at the same time. Yeah. It's like, you don't know how to read her. She seems kind of fucking dangerous. And I love how this scene kind of really laid it out. And okay, she's interesting. And that's the point with this movie. Although I wasn't like completely enamored with it, that's kind of where I was like, you know what? I'm in for this ride now. I'm interested to see where this goes, and mainly because of her. So, that scene for me was the most effective of this movie.
I think it was the first time we saw a different side to her, I guess, didn't we, in that scene, and liked it. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, because she's breaking down the barriers between Gary and his parents, right? It's like, that's basically what she's doing in that scene, like, very forcefully.
Destroying it.
Yeah.
No chance of a future relationship. So.
I still just like loved his mum's reaction, like when he's talking about tossing himself off, and so it's so over the top, kind of.
Yeah, I thought you were combing your hair with the tap on it all day.
A little scene later on as well, and she's just showing Al the dad like the pictures. This is our beautiful boy Gary. He's like, look at
this. I don't know who you're talking about.
So good.
Oh dear. They really played with those two parents specifically, didn't they? Because there was really another scene later on, wasn't there? Like when he's driving in the Ferrari and they drive past.
Oh, yeah.
And so, wasn't that Gary?
Even though he says that son of a bitch, and he's like, going to kill his wife. He's the mother of his son. I was like, mwah, beautiful, beautiful line. Yeah, it's so like kind of obvious, but understated. I was like, you're waiting for her to react to what he said, and she didn't. Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Well, mine was just the whole party scene at the end. So I've just really enjoyed that last third of the film so much that there's so much happened in it as well. You know, they created a missile. They went through a house. They had the whole bathroom scene. There was the mutants coming through and wrecking the joint. And
the missile wrecking the joint.
Yeah.
Snowed in Chet's room.
Snowing in Chet's room. Just inexplicably. That weird scene where all the guests arrive and they swarm around the buffet and then someone walks past the camera and all the food's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like once the house party starts, the film is off the rails.
That's what I mean. It seemed really unpredictable. You just didn't really know where it was going to go. And I kind of loved it for that. Like, Lisa's walking around serving fucking caviar. I mean, what?
I'm convinced that they didn't, like, the film doesn't know what it is. And I'm convinced that that is a reflection of they didn't know what they were making. Like, they just threw everything at the wall. I suspect there may have been some cocaine involved. Mm. Yeah, they just threw everything at the wall.
Cocaine was in Chet's room.
Yeah.
They were just like, let's do this now. Why not? Let's see if it works. Fuck it.
And like the whole, I don't know, like all this stuff. And then like, we've talked about the mutants coming through and like, well, what the fuck? You know, like they're driving through the house. They're like revving up the stairs. And then I was like, well, what am I watching here? Like, you know, I kind of just loved it. for that on its own. It made it so unpredictable, and I really loved it for that as well, because I guess we all have a thinking of what this film is going to be, and we all have our own thoughts on what we're going to see. You know, it's going to be quite, have these kind of predictable parts in these kind in this film, because it seems to be to set the mold. You know, there's a mold, and like you have things that you're expecting to see in these kind of films. And for this one in particular, I just had nothing. There was nothing. Anything was on the table in this last part of the film.
Yeah,
and that's why I enjoyed it so much, for that on its own. And then, like you were saying about the gun and the way that Gary stood up for himself and for everybody else as well. Yeah, just really cool. And then I just loved the whole reversal the next morning of all the mess being cleaned up. I do love a good reversal shot.
All the books going back on the shelves was really good.
And the little subtle moment where the parents come back in and the table moves.
It was timed really well, isn't it?
Yeah, I was like, that's beautiful. And it's timed. Just so she throws her keys in the bowl. And I'm like, wow, that's just phenomenal.
That's phenomenal. Nice filmmaking.
Just a small touch.
Really easy to pull off. Like, not a complex effect at all, but done incredibly well. Like, timed really, really nicely.
Yeah.
And of course, all the stuff going with all the reversal shots, obviously. During that part, you know, everything gets up through the chimney and the kitchen turning blue and, you know, Chet turning into a whatever toad. It was he turned into.
Was it a toad?
He refers to Gary and Wyatt as toads earlier in the film. So I think that's why she turns him into a toad, yeah.
I thought he was like some kind of like poo monster or something, but, you know. That makes more sense.
A poo monster.
Just thinking of like Conker's Bad Fur Day again.
Yeah, but just it was a great end to the film. It was just brilliant and fantastic. You know, and I'm glad that Gary and Wyatt got the girls at the end of the day as well. You know, and
they're in love. In fact, they're in love.
Yeah,
but they didn't even seem that sad that their posh cars had just disappeared into thin air.
Because it doesn't matter anymore. Because they're happy and they found themselves and they found two people that like them for themselves.
Yeah,
that's a John Hughes wholesome message.
God bless John Hughes.
We spoke about it at the beginning. Like, did they just say that they created Lisa, so she exists as pure energy? You can't kill energy, so she just moves on to, like we said, the touch by
there's
an angel.
A place that keeps on calling me down the road. It's where I'll always be. Yeah, I guess so. She now just moves from place to place, getting in adventures.
So that would have been a really great series instead of that twat from Little House on the Prairie. Like, I'd have watched that on a Sunday afternoon. That'd be lovely. It's Lisa going around sorting out horny boys.
Was that not the same school that Gary and Wyatt went to?
I figured it was, but...
Yeah, I thought it was too. She's there now for some reason.
So basically, they're probably going to run into her again, which makes no sense.
I tell you why she's there. She's there so that you can have that long, lingering shot that goes up her entire body at the end of the film.
Yeah, of course.
That's why she's there, really. Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Spot on.
Like, the actress is sincerely very good in this film, but also, you know, they cast her for a reason. I do just want to mention the soundtrack. The Weird Science theme song is a banger, and it is by Oingo Boingo, which is Danny Elfman's band. I fucking love Oingo Boingo. Go listen to Dead Man's Party. It's one of the greatest songs ever made. They also have some very weird songs. They're not all great. Some of them are weird to the point of being a bit dodgy. If you're an Oingo Boingo fan, you know exactly which one I mean. Oingo Boingo, though, generally fantastic. Go listen.
Okay, chaps, let's get into our verdicts and our rating and get this film on our board. And I'm going to start first for a change and just get my verdict and rating out there, so I'm not the deciding factor in where this will end up this week.
And I mean, I didn't know what to expect coming. Well, I kind of did think I knew what to expect coming into Weird Science. Like, I thought I was just coming into another 80s teen comedy, funny film that just had this interesting twist on the plot and stuff. But I wasn't expecting such a strong female character in the film, which was a real nice surprise. And like the wholesome lessons that were kind of shown throughout the film in between all these like weird and wacky crap that was going on with the film. And I really liked that kind of balance in between of the film, I guess. So you had that one side where they were trying to tell you a story and trying to teach you a lesson, I guess. But then they had all just weird shit going on that made no sense whatsoever. And like the two mixed together just made for quite an entertaining film. I mean, it's an 80s film. It had its issues, but it wasn't problematic. I mean, we've covered City Hunter, which came out in the early 90s. That's got so much more issues going on than this film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I just really enjoyed it. And that last third of the film, the whole party and everything else, was just so unpredictable and just so batshit crazy that I just really loved it. Really great, great film, actually. I just really enjoyed it. It's very highly recommended. And I was really pleased that Rick Henderson mentioned the film when he was on the show and kind of brought my attention to the film. And I'm just really pleased I've actually seen it and it's on my film chart, whatever, you know. So yeah, cool film. And for that reason, I think it deserves like a 7.8.
Okay.
7.8.
Not unreasonable. Yeah.
Yeah, for me, this film really did subvert my expectations. I went in like you thinking it was just gonna be some lame kind of 80s teen sex comedy kind of thing. I've always known about this film. It's always been in my, always had, you know, had knowledge of it, but I'd never, ever watched it. So getting around to watching it now, I'm thinking, you know what? Cool. Okay. I can assess it. And yeah, I, for the most part, enjoyed it. Wasn't anything special, but I thought too that the final sort of the third act was really, really strong. And to me, Kelly DeBrock, an actress I never knew of, clearly she's not done much since. That's probably why. But really loved her a lot and thought she was such a great presence in this movie that I elevated the whole thing. Certainly some other good, you know, actors in it as well, but for me it was like the Kelly LeBrock show. Yeah, I liked it. It was a nice way to spend my morning commute into work watching it on the train. And I think I'm going to give it a 7.6.
I'm going to go for an 8. I really enjoyed it as, you know, an older person watching it who I haven't seen it for probably over 20 years. And I really enjoyed it. And it didn't sully my memories of the film at all. Yes, it's dated, but it was fair enough. It was enjoyable. It was insane. And I'm all about that. It's just fun. A good, fair, fun movie.
No, I was ready to hate this film. So I'm really pleasantly surprised that it is much better than I thought it would be, both in terms of like it being entertaining, but also its themes and its message. It was all way better than I thought it would be. It's not without its issues. It's still a product of its time in many ways. So. Yeah, and also I agree with Carl. It was too long. To me, it felt a little bit meandering at times.
Yeah.
But I think that is as a consequence of them doing a bunch of lines and going, okay, what do we do now? And they didn't really know where it was going or what they were going to do with it. But much more entertaining than I was expecting. Much sweeter than I was expecting. Really strong performances. So I reckon probably 6.5.
Ooh.
6.5. Cool. I didn't think it was going to go that low, Steve.
I was debating that or a 7.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, six I think and six, 6.5 feels right. I enjoyed it, but I feel like you guys enjoyed it a bit more than I did.
Well, that puts it at a total of 29.9, which, if my Google Docs is up to date, puts it.
Better be ahead of City Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah, way. I mean, it's like the film that's just above Top Secret, but like way. Top Secret. What am I saying?
I was going to say
City Hunter. Sorry. I'd say it's the next film up from City Hunter, but I mean, that big difference in the score, considering City Hunter only got a 7.7 in the end. So
we gave it that 29. Much.
Quite high, because I think I scored it a 1, didn't I, or a 0.5.
Wow. Yeah, I think it was something like that, Chris. Yeah. Yeah, crazy. So, yeah, up on the board it goes. Yeah, joins the rest of the films that we've covered. And I think also that I'm just going to start chucking, when we do cover more TV shows, just going to chuck it all together, I think.
Yeah.
And just do that. So Breaking Bad will be on there as well soon.
Nice.
It'll sort it out. And but just before we go and go into the closing of the podcast, like, I just want to, I just want to give my my support, I guess, to the writers and to the actors that are striking at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We're with you guys. I'm sure that will, you know, spur you on a bit more, knowing that the Wolfie Pod is behind your mm-hmm. courses. Yeah, I think it's a quite passionate about it, actually. Like, I think the studios are just literally ripping the shit out of them, and it's just not right. They're not treating them like human beings.
Nah.
They're just treating these people as if they're a piece of property, like a thing they can just use once and throw away, and, you know, think it's okay not to pay them the money that they deserve, and
mm-hmm.
and they don't seem to have a problem with it, which is the biggest worrying factor above it all.
It's been like that for decades, and what sucks is when the Writers Guild of America went on strike, I think we all knew instinctively it wouldn't be long before the actors were on strike as well. But what happened, the knee-jerk reaction was, a lot of the actors are writers and directors and producers themselves, so they had to strike regardless.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the actors who haven't written and produced are now on strike. So many things have been put on hold.
Yep.
There are podcasts I listen to that they legally can't record because they are actors.
Same.
They can't record. So a lot of the actors' podcasts, well, not a lot, a few of them, they can't legally record a podcast because it comes under writing and performance. So all of the, it is a very mixed bag of politics. And yeah, to see the actors on the picket line with the writers and directors is nice. And as people who are fans of TV and film and various other mediums, we support you all.
Absolutely. Try not to be so predictably anti-capitalist about it, but the way we live our lives, the system that we live in, there has to be financial interest, otherwise nothing gets done, right? That's mm-hmm. just the reality of life. But once you're a studio executive, once you're a shareholder, you're not an artist anymore, and you are focusing on the financial interest. It is your job to squeeze as much money out of these mm-hmm. things as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's abhorrent, because what they've lost sight of is that when you squeeze as much money out of it as you can, you also squeeze out all of the heart and all of the art mm-hmm. and all of the passion, and it's tragic. And so, yeah, absolutely, 100% behind it. I don't care if nothing new gets made for a year, 2 years. I don't care. It needs to be fixed, because, you know, this stuff is so important, and it can't go away. We can't let it go away. So
So we're right behind you guys over there striking in Hollywood, and you're all doing it for a good cause. And I hope that the studios grow a backbone or something, can actually realize that that you guys deserve better, and we'll still be here hopefully when it's all sorted out.
Have we got enough of a backlog of film and TV to be getting on with for the podcast, do you think?
I think we'll be all right.
Okay, good. All right,
think, yeah, so. Well, let's get out of here, shall we? And I'm sure you'll all be pleased to hear there is no ChatGPT shenanigans going on this week in the closeout. But thank you to everyone that has listened. As always, you're great people, and we really, really do appreciate you. But if you would like to donate to the show, then you can do so by visiting our Ko-fi page, where you can show your support, starting from just a single pound. And if that is not right for you right now, then a review or rating on your podcast service will go down a treat. Come and join us in our Discord server to discuss the topics we cover, films, TV, video games, and much more. The link can be found in the show description or on our website. And speaking of the website, please give it a visit. We have articles, game reviews, our entire back catalogue of episodes, and more at thewolfiepod.com, including a great article from one of our listeners, Deadbeat Punk, who did an article on the live-action remakes and his distaste for them, including a specific one on Dumbo. So yeah, go and check that on the website, and go and check his podcast out as well. He's a podcaster as well, and he does the podcast What the Fuck Do You Want? So yeah, go and it's a great little half hour listen, all about different topics every week, and he has a different guest on. So yeah, go and check that out. And if you're watching on YouTube, then please do the stuff for us, you know, click the bell, subscribe to the channel, all that shenanigans. It'd be really, really much appreciated. But chaps, it is time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Farewell all.
Goodbye.
My name has been Jason, and you've been listening to What's Wrong With Wolfie, a retro podcast to the max. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Barking.